This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Trying to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. Be able to ask Brock about some quarterback play. Baseball playoff expansion. Well, there's some people that seem to be benefiting or excited about that possibility, but it is time for Blue 42 with Brock Heward in the house.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42!
Morning, Brock. How are you now?
I'm doing great. How are you guys this morning?
Doing wonderful. Great to have you aboard.
Big game tonight. Is Tuesday night always your game night?
Tuesday night. Fly football game night, baby.
And Danny, I said to him earlier, I feel like this season's like the MLS. It just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Season number two.
They took a two-week break so they could heal up and get healthy, and then the hits started coming again.
Yep, and Paul has what some people have been asking him, a bowling brace on, essentially, on his wrist. No, I'm not. I'm not a hardo bowler. I'm just a really fragile individual. Brock.
Yes.
Should the Seahawks explore giving Michael Bennett another go-round?
I don't think so. How old's Michael now? 40, 42?
He's 42. Not 42. He's 34.
In football years, how old is that? That's pretty darn old. Young, hungry, and fast. Is he young? Nope. Is he going to be just
fast.
As hungry?
Probably not.
Maybe for his own sacks. And is he fast? No. So I think he doesn't check any of those boxes for me. He is a bit unique because he does know the system, because he is still super savvy. He was never fast, and yet he was still a very disruptive player. But at this stage of the game, I don't think I go down that road. And Danny, he was never a problem. You said that, right? With his teammates especially, he was never necessarily a problem. But it was a problem if it didn't go well for Michael. And the good news for him, for all those years, he played on a good defense. He got his numbers. He was productive. He's got his money. Well, he's not going to have, you know, depending on what they do this offseason, nearly as dominant a defense around him. And you need more just dominant dudes. You know, being down at that XFL, it was funny. Before the game, a number of times during the game, I just looked at so many of these guys that are so wanting to either get back in the league or get their shot at it. And so many of them were beat up, like Paul Gallant, right, with your just lingering wrist issues. So many of them have had, there's a guy with a neck fusion. Linebacker 24 was playing with a neck fusion. The kid I interviewed with a broken back and three torn ACLs. I mean, they are trying so hard to just get a bite and get back at that apple. And at this stage at 34, I don't necessarily see that as a fit.
No more Eye of the Tiger.
Well, it's his own. I mean, he just wants his own, which is great, which is understandable, which he knows is a veteran guy. Like, I got to produce to stay in this league. Because the minute I don't produce, they're going to look at 34 with a rather beat-up body, right, and who's battled through a lot of injuries through the years of his own, especially with his feet, and said they want the 24-year-old guy, not the 34-year-old guy. So I got to have my production to show them I can still do this. So I got to get my sacks and I got to get what's mine. And I don't think that's exactly what this defense needs.
Now, Brock, let's broaden it out a little bit. And it's not about Michael Bennett per se, but the question of, if you're the Seahawks, are you best pooling all your pass rush resources into one bucket and saying, we're going to go out and buy the best one we can get? Or are you best taking three, maybe four, sort of moderately sized investments, maybe some veteran minimums, a couple mid-tier salaries? Are you best adding?
Is Clowney in this conversation, or is Clowney like, hey, $20 million's going to him, and we'll set him aside, and now we'll have 30 to 40 million to do what you're talking about?
The assumption is that Clowney's back. If Clowney's not back, then I think that you might need to buy a pretty expensive guy and some.
There's no
but
question.
If Clowney's back and you're just adding the Clowney, is it better to get one really good guy or three or four sort of moderate risks that you take? So you roll the dice, Ziggy Ansah
style. Yeah. Paul made a good point. Many of those, you know, good buys are dudes that are exactly what we just got done talking about. Torn ACL, torn labrum, bad back, you know, this injury. The amount of time that these scouting departments spend on that, on the medical. not only the college kids as they're just digging through all of that, but the pro personnel as well to try to really get to the bottom of what all those guys are and where they're at physically, Danny. I would not take any bargain bin. We have seen it, Luke Jokel. We've seen it, Ziggy Ansah. We've seen it, Eddie Lacy. I would not take those bargain bin guys who have either had weight issues or who have had significant injury issues and say, yep, okay, it'll be different here in Seattle. Yeah, we're scientifically advanced. We're medically advanced. We got the best resources. We're going to get them totally healthy. I wouldn't go down that road. So I guess in a long-winded way, give me Clowney and then give me an absolute stud and then go draft and develop some of those other pieces.
Brock, did you say that you covered a guy that had broken his back? You talked to a guy that broke his back?
Yeah, like weekend? I felt like Jim Gray asking Mike Tyson.
I broke my back.
What do you mean by that?
Your back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or what portion?
Spinal.
So I was telling Lydia this story yesterday. The day before, we watched these guys practice. And man, it was a goofy-looking practice. It was chill. There was not a lot of intensity. But there was one running back, receiver, quarterback, Nick Hawley, that was wearing a band, like a resistance band, around his lower thigh the entire practice. Not like a warm-up, not trying to like get the groin loose or whatever. He was running with this thing. I was like, I have never in my life seen this. Well, in warm-ups, he was doing the same thing. And finally, I had enough. I'm like, I got to get to the bottom of this. And I went up to him as he was stretching. I'm like, can you just help me out here? You wear that band. Like, are you wearing? You're not wearing the band in the game. He's like, no. But you know, three torn ACLs and broken back. You got to do what you got to do. And yeah, yes, you do. And you got to go out there and ball. And he made a couple great plays. And you got to share that comment on.
Broke my back.
Yep, spinal.
What do you mean by that?
My back is broken.
What? A vertebrae or what portion?
Spinal.
By the way. 30-year anniversary of Buster Douglas knocking him out today.
Is it today?
Yeah.
Is it today?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you remember where you were, Brock? I know right where I was when I found out that happened. I was returning from delivering the Herald and News on a Sunday morning, and I went to turn on the sports reporters, and I saw Ralph Wiley and Bill Conlon and a number of other guys talking about the upset, and I was like, oh, my gosh. Nuts. Couldn't believe it. And then I watched the fight that night. They replayed it on HBO.
And then you watch Tyson and Barr still to this day, like goofing around. And you're like, nope, no thank you.
Even I would not look that guy.
Even at 75, would not take that guy on. All right, next.
Question two. All right, Brock, we had this conversation a little bit last segment about cornerbacks.
Yes.
Paul has heard enough of my, I'm scared because of Kerry Williams.
Yeah, it's not Kerry from the Stephen King movie.
We should just get over
he
it.
He was bad, man. He was really bad here. Oh, gosh.
Should the Seahawks consider signing a veteran corner?
You got a name?
Darius Slay.
Oh, wow. Shuddering?
Not Chris Harris.
Darius Slay is not a thinker.
Ah.
Not, as they like to say, not a thinker.
See, now, Brock, I said it in a much different way.
Yeah.
I said that he excels at man-to-man coverage.
There you go.
Like, if you want to get him to go out there and match up athletically with someone else.
See, now
like
I'm off.
Peterson, he can absolutely
that. Danny, why didn't you just say that? You could have just totally ended the conversation right there. And now I'm off.
I had him in college, and I think he bounced through a few junior colleges. And the coordinator's like, yeah, we don't play much. Like, we play man. I'm like, oh, you just a great man player? No, like, there's not a lot. No, he's going to play man. You guard that man. So I'm sure he's developed some since then. There's no question. He's had a good career in the
league.
Good
all-pro, right.
Yes, he's a good athlete, and he can run and hit. And you know what? Sometimes simplify. Sometimes some of the best players, Damon and I will talk about this, and other guys, sometimes it's not good to be a thinker. Honestly, you overthink things. See ball, hit ball. Like, there was such an advantage to some guys playing the game. They just don't process. They don't think. I just go out there and react. And you can get away with that in defense. You can totally get away with it in college. Can you get away with it in Pete's scheme? I think Pete's shown you through the years of what he values in corners and the very best of them. And I want the very best. I want the next Richard Sherman. I want a guy that can sit there in play zone coverage as if it's man. I want a guy that can read route combinations and pattern read. And formation read and get a jump on plays and not just knock a ball down, but actually take the ball away. And to me, that's the only corner in free agency, Danny, that I'm looking at. Give me a guy that can and has taken the ball away. More than likely, he's not hitting the streets because those guys are valuable commodities.
You guys have both covered this team for a really long time. Could you see them adding more man to their defense, or is it always going to be predominantly zone?
Well, Pete's going to say a lot of our cover three and what we do, a lot of our match defense incorporates a lot of man principles. So I would hope so. I mean, last year was so soft through so many long stretches. Some of that has to end. You have to play with a little more aggression, and you got to get the personnel to do it.
Question three. Where is Philip Heck Rivers going to end up?
Well, he moved his 12 kids to Tampa. Mm-hmm. Actually, he has, I believe, 9, maybe 10.
33,
he's,
yes.
He's not at 12.
Yeah, come on.
He's, what, 9
Go
or 10?
Go with the under. Go with the under.
It's either 9 or 10, Lydia. I think
I think it's 9.
I think Mrs. Rivers has been pregnant for, like, most of their marriage. Yes, yeah. 2 decades. Yes, poor thing. Like, in and out of pregnancy for the last 20 years. Like, 9 or 10 kids. He moved them all out of SoCal down to Tampa Bay. I would think of Bruce Arians. I think Bruce Arians and Philip Rivers would be must-see TV. And I think that is a system that sprays the ball around a ton. June Jones was great sitting in our production meeting. He's the coach down there in Houston. And he said the nice thing about this system is guys have never not played well in it. And that portends well as I look at you. I see Nick Rolovich, who runs this same June Jones system. For Coug fans, if you want to, this XFL season, watch the Roughnecks. Because that is going to be your system. Not the air raid, but what June Jones and the run and shoot does. And, you know, and they're going to put up a bunch of numbers. And he said, you know what? Bobby Hebert in this system was a Pro Bowler and couldn't throw the ball 40 yards. I think Philip Rivers' arm right now, and we saw that last year, has deteriorated with his body a bit. And he can't throw it like he used to throw it. But Bruce Arians' system, with a Carson Palmer aged, you know, it can still find guys to get the ball to. I think that that would be the most natural fit, as he's already moved his family to Tampa.
And they have a great receiver in Mike Evans.
They have a bunch of good receivers, Godwin and Evans, and, you know, a rush defense that was number one in the league. They need to fix their secondary, but, you know, I think in the division there with an aging Drew Brees as well, a total unknown in Carolina, an aging, you know, Matt Ryan. I don't know. Just that fix, that fit of Arians and Rivers would be one that I would like to see.
When Rivers finally physically goes, like when it's done, is his arm just going to come off his body? Because the way he throws, like I've heard Bradshaw describe it as a shoulder thrower. Like he throws unlike anybody I've ever seen. And there's part of me that thinks that the arm is just going to detach. Like the Russian weightlifter in the all-steroid Olympics on Saturday Night Live. Like the arm's just going to come off.
Yes. I believe Bulgarian, but yes. I think it was two things come to mind. Uncle Rico would be the only other one you've seen throw a little bit like that, seriously. Number two, it's because he was the son of a coach. And when he was young, the ball was too heavy for him. And that is just how he had to learn to throw it. And the dude is still phenomenally accurate. I think has a passion to play. It'd be Tampa. The other one you've seen is Indianapolis. But I think Indianapolis is going to be desired by a lot of guys. That O-line with 3 Pro Bowlers, that defense that is young and a ton of cap space to add to, I think Indy is going to be a very desirable job for any of these veteran guys.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
I'll bet you, Uncle Rico.
He could make it happen.
That's Blue 42 today.
Who's the most Uncle Rico at our station?
Ooh, that's a good question. Do we have an Uncle Rico at our station? Why are you laughing back there, Lydia and Jess?
Well, there is someone who likes to recall glory days on this show.
Yeah,
so.
A pretty obvious answer, I feel like, Brock. You have a layup. You have a layup here.
Am I looking at him?
Yeah. So I think you do, yeah.
I feel like you trolled us a little there, Brock.
Only one person who refers to himself as a game breaker.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not Michael Bumpus. Definitely should be.
Did you put up good numbers in high school back in the day? Were you a productive player?
I was on defense, yes. I racked up a lot of tackles.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Were safety or corner?
Safety.
Safety.
Basically, it was one of those defenses where no one passed.
Right. So you just came up and you just filled the gaps.
Right.
You were the hammer.
You were Cam Chancellor type.
You were the thump.
I had 16 in a game.
Woo! Yeah.
And the thing about when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
Whoa! That's Paul Gallon in the tackle. That's Paul Gallon in the tackle. That's Paul! And that's Toyota Piala bringing it this morning. Thank you, boys.
Thanks,
have
Brock.
A great
Thank
morning.
Thank you very much,
How's
Brock.
It
is Brock Heward. He'll be back with us on Thursday. Tomorrow we're going to have Michael Bumpus will be with us for Blue 42. Philip Rivers is the first domino in what I'm fascinated by this offseason's quarterback market. And you look around and you see who's going where. You've got some openings. He's the first one. We know he's in play. There are some other guys that we think might be in play, I think that other guys that could end up changing teams, Tom Brady could be a free agent. You could also have Andy Dalton moving, Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. Now we've got Taysom Hill thrown in there. I don't think any team is going to sign Taysom Hill as a starter. I can't imagine that they're going to look at adding him and saying, hey, we're going to build around this guy.
Why would they? And what was up with that Florio tweet? Oh, he's a game breaker. He's a game changer. I mean, what is he, Paul Gallant? Like, seriously, I don't understand why Taysom Hill has gotten this kind of appeal. He is basically what Tim Tebow should have been. Tebow should have settled into a role like this. I don't know if Hill's maybe believing because of all the press clippings that have been thrown at him over the last couple of months, but this is a guy that has done legitimately as a quarterback nothing. And to believe he could be a starting quarterback, that is an extreme leap of faith.
He's a good change of pace. I think I could see a team paying him between $5 and $10 million for coming in for half a dozen plays in a week, and the possibility that he develops. Who goes and ends up with the LA Chargers? Because that's the first clear-cut vacancy we have. That's the first one where, okay, this team is going to go, and even if they draft a quarterback, they're probably going to sign a quarterback as well.
Do they feel that they need to have someone who can draw interest to a team that no one cares about in the greater Los Angeles area? Or do they care about getting somebody in as a placeholder and to make things easy for the future quarterback? It should be the latter, to be perfectly honest. They're not going to win fans over in Los Angeles unless they have a couple of successful seasons, and they're just going to have to accept the fact that they're not going to be much of a draw early on. But I think over time, this is a team that theoretically could overtake the Rams, because I don't know that the Rams are going to be doing a whole lot over the next couple of seasons. If I were the Chargers, I'd think about someone like Andy Dalton. I'd take a guy like that, put him in. You might think that you're close to contending if you're the Chargers based off of what happened 2 years ago, but honestly, I just don't really buy them as one of those teams that's right around the corner. I think they need to get that young quarterback and press the reset button.
They're going to draft 6th overall. Other teams that we know will be looking for quarterbacks, Cincinnati is certainly, and I think it's accepted and expected that Joe Burrow's going there.
Right.
Miami is going to be looking for a quarterback.
That's an interesting one. I feel like they're going to end up with Tua, but if they end up with Tua, are they going to put him in right away, or are they going to bring Ryan Fitzpatrick back? And I would just say as the placeholder, I think it's interesting for someone brought this up. They noticed that in the end of season montage and trailer that they have, I guess, for next season, Ryan Fitzpatrick was nowhere to be found in it. And that's usually noteworthy. Teams will keep guys in, even if they maybe are potential free agents. I'm just, Danny, I get you're sort of rolling your eyes at it, and I understand it. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is not a starting quarterback.
I agree.
Long-term in the NFL.
But he's a very good placeholder.
And but they're going to want to find someone. They finish strong. They're going to want to find a quarterback of the future. Oakland, do we think they'll be looking for a quarterback? There's rumors that they'll be interested in Brady.
They're in this weird spot where they have no faith in Derek Carr, and it's glaringly obvious to everyone. And yet, they haven't made any moves about it. They went a whole year with him last season. I think there are moments where John Gruden probably tries to tell himself that there's something here. The big problem with Gruden is that if you go and play for John Gruden, you are going to have to adapt to Gruden. Gruden is not going to adapt to a veteran quarterback. I don't think Brady would be willing to deal with that.
It's a great point. Gruden has a habit of trying to find the next Rich Gannon. That is, he is constantly acquiring veteran quarterbacks with the idea of whether it was Jeff Garcia in Tampa Bay. He tried to get Jake Plummer in Tampa Bay. He loves the idea of getting a veteran with some experience, some success, who the luster has worn off of.
So that's another Andy Dalton possibility. And honestly, given the way things went for Tannehill last season, I would be curious as to Andy Dalton going there. Dalton's not bad. He's not good, necessarily, but he's exactly in that spot where you're like, you know what? I don't feel like I'm killing myself by putting Dalton out on the field. I'm just not really whelmed by him.
The Broncos and Jaguars are two teams that are in interesting spots in that each one has a younger player with a fair amount of possibility. For the Jaguars, it's Gardner Minshew. For the Broncos, it's Drew Lock. They're both going to look at it. It's not going to rule out the possibility of adding someone. The other team, and this is the team that I think probably has the it's the best team with the most clear-cut need for a quarterback, the Colts.
I want Cam Newton on the Colts. I've decided this in the last 5 minutes. Cam Newton on the Colts, they're a Super Bowl contender. Best offensive line in the NFL. they have made it work with a running game that features running backs that you've never heard of in Marlon Mack, who had a very good season last year. This, I think, has the makings of Frank Reich. Give him a quarterback that has some really interesting tools at his disposal with that great offensive line in front of him, and maybe you turn into some sort of giant version of what the Baltimore Ravens are doing, where you're mauling people with your giant battering ram-sized quarterback. The Colts and Cam Newton needs to happen. I would be really intrigued by it.
Colts have the 13th overall pick. Do you think they'd have to trade a first-round pick to acquire Newton? That would give the Panthers 7 and 13.
Oh man,
you've got a new coach there in Matt Rhule who's going to be trying to establish things his way. I think that could be something that you see. Indianapolis is sort of the understated next big domino to fall in the quarterback market. We'll see if Brady ends up going anywhere. We'll see what happens. If Phillip Rivers goes to Tampa Bay, that'll throw Jameis Winston. There's a lot of players with pretty high draft pedigree and pretty high career numbers that could be on the move this offseason.
And you know what? You brought up the first round pick. I think for the Colts, it's worth it. I think if the Colts do it, I think they're actually a contender right now. If they have a quarterback that's better than Brissett. They tried it. Brissett wasn't horrible, but he's like many quarterbacks out there that you like as a backup, you like for a couple of games, you don't like for a full season.
Somebody points out Oakland doesn't have an NFL team. Have they officially moved? Do we have to
call
them
Las Vegas? Yes, they are officially
Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's going to take some time. That one, I mean, we never talk about sports teams from Las Vegas. I know that they have the Golden Knights, but in the NHL, but it's just weird to think Las Vegas. Danny, whenever I think of it, I just think of all the teams in Madden that I moved to Las Vegas. Usually I started off with the Arizona Cardinals, and I almost always move them to Las Vegas, and I would like name them the Wolfpack. Yeah, it was fun. No one cares.
Why'd you call them the Wolf? Oh, because of the Hangover?
They are only a couple of different logos that you could pick, and the coolest one was this like wolf that was like crying with a moon in the background. So I always call them the Wolfpack.
It's Danny and Gallant. Gallant is the leader of the Wolfpack. I'm going to broach the subject of whether or not lawsuits are ever allowed in sports. Are you allowed to sue in sports? Maybe in this case. We'll talk about it next. The Wheel of Non-FL.
So were there two of us? There were two of us in the Wolfpack. I was alone first in the pack.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Lawsuits are not allowed in sports, right? We generally believe that sports are this special little sanctuary where police enforcement, like you can enforce it on the crowds, that sort of stuff, but police enforcement doesn't apply to the games, and the same goes for lawsuits. At least that's my general stance, Paul.
Right, and I think we saw people try to make it happen with Myles Garrett earlier in this past season, where Myles Garrett hit Mason Rudolph with a helmet. There are some people that were saying, like, oh, maybe the police should be involved in it, but you're right. As far as lawsuits and stuff, I do think that we generally should separate that from sports, because if we allow one to happen, it's going to be a slippery slope. Our country has enough of them as it is.
I forget, what was your position on Garrett? Should he have gone to the clink for what he did?
No, I thought that people were overreacting into what had happened and acting like it was the worst thing that they had ever seen. I thought it was bad, but I thought people were looking for something to be super angry about.
What if your career was ended because another person cheated and you could show that?
Well, you'd have to have a very strong and a very compelling case with a lot of evidence.
Okay, so here would be the case that a given pitcher came into a game in 2017 in Houston against the Astros. He threw 29 pitches. He gave up 4 runs, 4 hits, walked 3 people, got 1 out, pitched 1/3 of an inning. The next day, he was sent down to the minor leagues and was never heard from again in the major leagues. Knowing what we know about the Trastros and the trash can banging, could you go into a court of law and say, Your Honor, you can hear that my pitches were being tipped. This is what was happening. And sue them for damages.
See, here's where it's going to be tough for him. And I this guy, I think, is
what's his name? Bolsinger?
Yeah, the dude was not a good pitcher. The 3 walks is what I would point at. And I would say,
They knew what was coming. They knew what was coming, Paul. They could lay off the pitch because they knew a breaking pitch was coming.
You hit the strike zone, bro. And I think to blame it all on the Astros being sent down to the minor leagues when you're a journeyman, that's a real, real strong, I think, and wrong show of confidence in oneself. You were an up and down, or you were in betweener, and yeah, that might have ended your major league career. You were bad in that game. You were really bad. The three walks thing is the one that I would point at if I were the defense team for the Houston Astros, and I would say, this guy could hit the broadside of a barn, let alone a strike zone.
Now, he's saying he doesn't want any of the money. I think it's $31 million in postseason bonuses, and he's saying that that'll be given to charities in Los Angeles. So he's going for the principal, not the profit here. Is that compelling in any way? That at some way you've got to bite? Of all the people, A.J. Hinch lost his job. Jeff Luna, the general manager, lost his job. Everybody's got the stink of cheating about him, but none of the players have suffered anything so far. And this would kid him where it hurts. Take a bite out of their wallet.
That's the one thing that I do think on this front that should be maybe as a slap on the wrist to the Astros, who have not been punished. None of these players have been punished. It's an intriguing idea. And if he had been asking for all of this money for him, that would be absolutely ridiculous, and it would be one of those people that I would just want basically put in jail for wasting all of our time and for just looking like a whiny little baby. But in this situation, yeah, that's an added little twist to it because it punishes the Astros. It goes to a good cause. It happens to be a cause that's in Los Angeles, the team that feels like it's been gypped out of a World Series victory.
Although that's the other thing, is actually Los Angeles shouldn't feel that way, right?
No, they shouldn't. They should not feel that way. Clayton Kershaw is every postseason, and they act as if, like, oh, well, they should have had the World Series against the Red Sox. Oh, and then you have, what's-his-face? Who's that guy that's on Around the Horn all the time? Bill Plaschke writing this whiny column. Oh, why didn't we win? Like, I'm sorry, you still have to perform. And I understand that you think that the Astros had an unfair advantage in that 2017 World Series. Every single Houston Astros player, and I understand that it's kind of hard to take what they say and believe all of it, but they would argue the same thing, that the Dodgers were doing the exact same thing in that series. And just look at Game 7 and the amount of crossed signs in that Game 7. It was ridiculous, the amount of pauses in game and sign changing and mound visits that were taking place.
The end result of when we go back and try to punish retroactively, which in some ways is what this is, this is why it doesn't work. The team that you would move into the winning spot never will feel like they've won. Like, I saw an LA council person had made a motion of saying, hey, I move that baseball recognize us as the world champions. And even the Dodger players were like, don't do that.
Great
we
use
didn't
of tax
win.
Dollars.
Yeah, like, well, that part aside, just the whole idea of if you're a fan of that team, you don't want that banner raised. Like, you don't want, and I guess if you're this guy, Mike Bolsinger, who's trying to make a point, you don't want the money from it, right?
Right.
Like, you wouldn't, like, the idea of, like, oh, because at that point, you didn't earn it. Like, we all agree when we play sports, there's kind of this gentleman's agreement that goes on of, like, at the end, no tears. Like, you could be sad and you could, but you can't whine and say we should have won. And if you do, like, there's a certain limited amount of time at which point we're going to start looking at you like Saints fans. And you're like, okay, you guys got jobbed, but you got to get over it because that wasn't the entire story of it. Like, there's a certain limit on how much you can complain.
Isn't there a certain assumption, just the way that you sort of sign a health and safety waiver when you play sports, that there's an assumption of human error or there's an assumption of cheating that might happen in the game, whether it's the human error part speaks to the officials, so the Saints' complaints, or that there is cheating at some point in some manner in some aspect of the game at any time. Like, that to me seems like a waiver that you sign when you play professional sports, that it's going to happen. The human element, because we are humans at the end of the day, that's going to happen.
I agree with you on that front, Lydia. And I would just wonder, in the case of this specific cheating scandal, is this the worst one that we have seen in any sport? Is this worse than anything ever? And if it is, then maybe you have a case on that front.
Yeah, also, maybe. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, like, championing for the Astros right at this point. I'm just playing a little devil's advocate. Also, I know what these minor leaguers go through, and the fact that he is a journeyman, Paul, also speaks to the fact that those opportunities, when you finally do earn them and you are in the show, they're all the more meaningful and
100%.
Impactful. Everybody should read Where Nobody Knows Your Name. It's an incredible book that follows around minor leaguers, not only the players, but the umps and the coaches. And the journey that they're on, especially if you're not a highly touted prospect or you weren't a high draft pick, you don't have a huge signing bonus, is incredible. So I can understand his plight as well.
when you get wronged, and I would say that Bolsinger would be among the wronged parties if there were signs being stolen in that game. Here's what you get. You get the right to be mad at that person, at the opposing team forever. You get the opportunity, like you can for the rest of your life, be furious and sneer at any accomplishment they have and sort of have a grudge against them. You don't get a right to get it fixed.
It is, though, one of those things that's really tough to sit with. Like, you lost to this person that took advantage of you.
Yep. You get to be mad at them.
And you just have to accept
it. You get the right to have a grudge. You don't have to accept. You're not going to get it fixed. And I guess that's the part of it that you can't fix it.
But that
In 2005, the Seattle Seahawks played in a Super Bowl against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was a terribly officiated game. I don't believe there was an underlying conspiracy. I believe that subtly maybe the crowd or the storyline played an impact on some of the. I think the officials kicked three calls that were kind of inexplicable, and they were just mistakes that happened. And every Seattle Seahawks fan has the right for the rest of their lives to feel that Bill Levy is a terrible official, that Mike Pereira, for defending Bill Levy, is absolutely full of it, and that the Steelers, while they technically won the game, that was a game where the Seahawks absolutely got hosed. What you don't have the right to do is expect that result to be changed. It happened. It's over. You get to be mad about it for the rest of your life. You don't get to be satisfied.
But that's the frustrating thing, Danny, and maybe this is just me, a sometimes very petty person, but also someone that realizes every now and then it's time to forgive and to move on. But that's one of those things that's really hard to ever get over and to stay with that anger, that madness the rest of your life and not have the ability to get retribution. That I feel, and it's a reality of life. We all go through this, don't we? We all have people that screw us over, and you can't do anything about it except for say, well, I learned from this. But sometimes you want more than that. And man, I the right to just stay mad at something, I'd want a little bit more.
More. All you get is the right to be mad. I will quote now my favorite film ever, The Princess Bride. After a sword duel with Inigo Montoya and Wesley, Inigo Montoya says, "Who are you? I must know." And Wesley looks at him and says, "Get used to disappointment." That is a motto for life. Get used to disappointment. You're just going to have to live with it. You just get to be mad. That's it.
But he did kill Wesley, so.
No, he didn't.
Didn't he?
What are you talking about? No.
Dude, no.
Okay. Well,
come on. Have you not watched that?
I thought he killed him.
He wasn't identified as Wesley yet. He was just the man in black then.
That's
you'd
correct.
Like to think that, wouldn't you?
And he was only mostly dead when he was killed.
I meant the person that killed his dad. He killed his dad, right?
The guy... six-fingered man killed
yes.
his dad.
He killed the six-fingered man, right?
Yeah, Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die.
I don't know the
Wesley gets
name.
Killed
need, like,
on the
a
rack
chart,
yes. in the pit of despair.
That guy killed the other guy.
It's Danny and Gallant. Coming up next, we're going to take a look. The Seahawks gave Josh Gordon another chance. Would they give a player this pass? Well, he does have a pass rush, so he's got that going for you. We'll tell you who it is next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
The Pete Carroll Seahawks are clearly willing to take shots on certain players that maybe other teams wouldn't. We saw it with Josh Gordon this past season, and I'm very curious as to where they draw the line on that front, Danny. You've been here for 10 years, you know, covering the entire Pete Carroll era. You know what he typically does, what he typically won't do. And I ask that question because I stumbled across a video last night of Jay Glazer, who was asked about Aldon Smith, who has had chance after chance after chance. And if he were to get another chance, I think we're talking about like chance 11 in terms of all the things that have happened with him over the last decade. He thinks that Aldon Smith deserves another chance.
Aldon's great because Aldon's been working with our vets in our MVP program every single Wednesday night. He shows up, at him too, like he's lost his tribe and team. I'm so proud of him, what he's done. But Aldon has now been, you know, sober for a while, and he's been helping a lot of our vets with their sobriety. It's amazing.
That's amazing.
That's the biggest thing you got to do. You got to be of service to other people, and he got that. He's really, we've given a lot of guys second chances. he deserves as much as anybody I've been around.
And even if it's just in life, just yeah. period. But do you see him making his way back into the
league? Yeah, I really do. Hey, look, we've worked with a lot of guys, try to give them their chance again. A lot of them I worry about. There's been a couple of guys I haven't. He's one of them. He's like, hey, it's not my life anymore. It's not who I am.
He's brand new.
Hey, it's completely, you know, it's not who I am. It's not my life. And the fact that he knows, too, like, I've got to help out other people, that's what I'm most proud of about him. I'm proud of Alden Smith.
What do you think when you hear that audio, Danny?
I'm happy for Alden Smith. He very clearly struggled with substance abuse, and I think for him, alcohol was pretty significantly
Correct.
Involved. I'm happy for him. The question beyond that of should you give him a chance, I have no problem with giving him an opportunity on the team if he can still play. I just wonder, I mean, he's what? Is he 5 years removed?
Four it's been a
years
while.
Removed?
I think it's
4 years
three or
removed
four.
From playing in the league. He was last with Oakland. And that's a while. And physically, is he able to do it? I would have absolutely no problem going out and seeing what he could do. I thought that Deion Jordan was somebody who struggled with, for him, it wasn't alcohol, but it struggled with similar issues and drug suspensions and not playing the league for a while. And he came here and he had one really good season and then a second season in which he was still playing and contributing. That would be one of those guys that I would say taking a flyer on.
Glazer.
I have no problem. Like adding him to it and saying, hey, here, what can you do with this? You cannot depend or count none of it. And I would put Josh Gordon in this category, too. If Josh Gordon can come back next year, great. You cannot, your plans cannot depend on him remaining available.
100%. Yes. You can't tie your entire plans to a guy like Josh Gordon. And same thing for a guy like Alden Smith. And it's important to take what Jay Glazer says with a grain of salt, because I think he's very loyal to the players that he interacts with on a daily basis. So he's clearly feeling Alden Smith, seeing him all the time. But he said Alden Smith's in fantastic shape.
He was also.
Oh, my God. We got him. Look, he's about 285 pounds right now and just shredded.
Yeah.
He is a freak of nature. Yeah.
That's what's up. I mean, that's good for that's a good
but
start.
He deserves it because, again, him wanting to get back in the league, he's like, I want to help out other guys who went through this also. I'm trying to help guide those guys. I'm proud.
So he's in good shape. And, you know, Brock earlier this hour said, you want to get fast, you want to get speed. If he still has any of that, I'm intrigued by it. I don't think personally I would take a flyer on it, Danny. And that's my question. Where do the Seahawks draw a line with second chances? Because you could go to Alden Smith's Wikipedia. There have been incidents that involve alcohol. There were a couple of shaky incidents in March of 2018, two in the same month, that involved a woman that he was, I believe, at one point dating, perhaps the fiance of. And there was violence involved, at least per the police reports that came out afterwards. And is that where they draw the line? Do they say no to someone like that?
They certainly have in the past, and they've looked in and said, okay, this is a player that we're not going to pursue. Tyreek Hill was not on their draft board. Like Tyreek Hill was not someone that they were considering choosing. Obviously, the selection of Frank Clark, and there are other times. So I think, like most teams, they go on a case by case basis. The question that I think comes up first when it comes to that is this something he's still wrestling with? Is this something that he has moved past? And then you get to the question, is there a disqualifying behavior? And I don't know the specifics of those issues. So I'm not sure and wouldn't feel comfortable saying, like, hey, I think that they'll be able to that this is a player that they would still consider employable. In my mind, and here's how every team should approach it, you should have a criteria of player behavior that is, regardless of that player's talent or value, these are the things we will not employ someone who has either been. And it's how you come about, because how you come about setting what those firm things are, is it anybody who's been arrested? Well, that's not necessarily, you could see where someone would say, well, there are arrests sometimes that don't result in charges. At the same time, do you need a conviction? Because I think we all know in the criminal justice system how difficult it is to prosecute crimes of domestic violence or issues that come up with violence toward women. So that, I think, is too high a threshold, because it allows someone who just avoids prosecution to be able to still be employed. But I think you have to have a separate criterion. It's not about how good is this player. It's about, is this someone that we'd employ? And if the person passes that test, then I would think that someone like Alden Smith, absolutely. You've got 90 roster spots, and when he was in the league, and we're going back 10 years ago now when he entered the league, he was
a monster.
He was a rare physical size, the size and speed that he had, he was a rare, rare kind of pass rushing specimen.
And if he still has any of that, you definitely think about it. I'm curious as to how their experience with Josh Gordon makes them feel about situations like this going forward. Because it does seem like they would be willing to give Josh Gordon yet another shot next season, though I doubt that they would actually rely on him.
I don't think they feel burned by Josh Gordon. I think they feel sad for Josh Gordon. And I think there's a significant difference. And their experiences with Brandon Browner, who after he left Seattle has become involved in significantly more serious allegations, and I'm not referencing that at all. But when Brandon Browner would be suspended, there was a disappointment for him. Hey, I'm sorry. That's too bad for him that it happened. And you can't be part of it and part of the team while you're suspended, and I'm disappointed for you. But very rarely does Pete put himself in a situation where he feels like, oh my gosh, I've been burned. We were relying on you, and you undermined the team. I don't think they came away from the experience with Josh Gordon, if anything other than, hey man, I'm sorry you couldn't stay on target. I'm sorry that you lost touch with your recovery, because that's a disappointment. We're more disappointed for you than we are in you.
I think this is the guy they should keep an eye on. And I would be very curious to see, especially say Jadeveon Clowney decides to go elsewhere, if this is somebody that they say, okay, well, I mean, we have to take some gambles here. We have to make some risks. If he is, as Jay Glazer described him, definitely sounds like someone that at very least is worth a phone call.
I put him in the drawer and I say, like, maybe he can contribute in there, but you've got to add him. He is the afterthought. He is the half court shot that you take up. Like, maybe this will work out.
Right. He's in our bargain bin. He is not on our middle shelf. He is not on our top shelf. He is essentially in a plastic bottle at this point in time. Danny and Gallant, he is Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Could a piece up at 710sports.com bring a familiar face back to the Seahawks? We'll discuss that next on 710 ESPN Seattle.